This is WAMC's Northeast Report. I'm Brian Shields. Top stories, one of the first big storms of the season moved across the eastern half of the country today, causing deadly traffic crashes and closing schools as it dropped snow as far south as central Alabama. As much as 8 inches of snow blanketed the St. Louis area. Forecasters predicted up to 6 or more apart in parts of New York State and New England as the storm made its way east. Roads were already clogged by midday Thursday in Ohio. Winter storm warnings and winter weather advisories up for our region. The snow will begin tonight. It will be heavy at times overnight, mixing with sleet and freezing rain at times. Meteorologist Garrett Argianis will be along in just a bit. He'll have the details in the weather summary. Also making news at this hour, beginning next month, the Albany County District Attorney will no longer prosecute low-level marijuana possession cases. Our Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas will have that story. Berkshire's Bureau Chief Josh Landy speaks with the Pittsfield Police Chief Michael Wynn about the reputation of the force and efforts to make it better in the public eye. Also, our Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard will speak with New York State Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos, who recently announced he's leaving the post after 3 years. A federal judge has delayed a decision on whether to order the Trump administration to return the White House press credentials of CNN reporter Jim Acosta. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Kelly had been expected to announce his decision on the matter this afternoon, but delayed the announcement until tomorrow morning. Support for WAMC comes from Warwick Valley Farmers Market, the 25th season of bringing fresh from the farm table food ready for the table. Weekly new foods from artisan vendors on Sundays, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., warwickvalleyfarmersmarket.org. Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue in Del Mar, offering wild bird seed, feeders, houses, heated baths, and de-icers. Announcing the holiday open house Saturday 10 to 5, wildbirdjunction.com. Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute Museum of Art in Utica, presenting Rose Marasco Index, an artist's retrospective of photographic processes. More at mwpai.org. You're listening to WAMC's Northeast Report. A change is coming soon to the way marijuana possession cases are handled in Albany County. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas reports.
Albany County District Attorney David Soar says beginning next month, his office will decline to prosecute cases solely involving possession of less than 2 ounces of marijuana, roughly equivalent to personal use.
That means if a person who's charged with Article 22105 of the penal law will no longer be prosecuted in Albany County moving forward, effective December 1st, 2018. It also means anyone with possession under 2 ounces, as articulated in Article 221.10, a B misdemeanor, you will also not be prosecuted in Albany County.
Soares explained the new policy comes about as we move into a new era of legal marijuana usage and following a number of public meetings the DA held across the county. The Democrat was explicit as to what the December 1 policy shift does not mean.
It does not mean that an individual can freely burn marijuana in public in the presence of other citizens and not expect to be prosecuted. Anyone openly smoking in Albany County will still be prosecuted by our office. It does not mean that you can operate a motor vehicle under the influence and not be prosecuted. One of the other announcements that I'm making here today is that we are applying DWAIs, driving while ability impaired, to our already formidable policy. In addition, anyone who is consuming marijuana, smoking marijuana in the presence of children, will also be prosecuted by this office.
As for people affected by marijuana arrests in the past, Soares encourages them to look into the Clean Slate program to expunge past convictions and says there's a link to apply on the DA's website.
The average user that we're seeing in coming in through our courts are not the people that our energies, our resources should be spent on.
Alice Green, Executive Director of Albany's Center for Law and Justice, welcomes the policy change and says she's happy Soares listened to the input from the public meetings.
Marijuana arrests and prosecutions have always been a major concern in the community because the laws have been applied selectively to particularly African Americans, and they suffer from disparate treatment. And also, this gives us hope that in this state we are moving towards legalization of marijuana. You know, District Attorney Soares is head of the District Attorneys Association, and I hope that this will encourage many more counties to move in this direction. So we're very, very happy to hear this, and we're also happy to know that he would work with the people who have been convicted under the Clean Slate program.
Soares believes eliminating prosecuting low-level offenders will free up time and personnel at crime labs, expediting more serious criminal investigations. A public meeting to discuss marijuana laws in Albany County is set for December 12th at 6 p.m. at the main branch of the Albany Public Library. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
Pittsfield, Massachusetts Police Chief Michael Wynn leads the largest department in Berkshire County. He sat down this week with our Berkshire's Bureau Chief Josh Landes to talk about a number of issues ranging from officer misconduct and mass shootings to staffing levels and immigrant enforcement.
Wynn, who was appointed chief last year after a decade as acting chief, leads an authorized force of 99. Around 60 uniformed officers and supervisors patrol the Berkshire's largest city of around 43,000 every day. Wynn addressed federal statistics that paint a picture of rising crime rates in Pittsfield.
If you go and you look at the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, one of the very first things they say at the outset of that report is, don't use these numbers for community-to-community comparison. They're not designed that way. They're intended for law enforcement planning and deployment. They're not intended to look at various communities and rank one another.
He says his department's assessment of violent crime is more nuanced.
We are seeing an incremental increase in the last several years. But again, a lot of what we're seeing is people who are known to one another in some, if it's not a purely domestic relationship, it's incidents where there's at least some known quantity between the parties involved.
Wynn also said which crimes are reported and how they're classified can create misleading statistics, noting that the FBI has, quote, no clear definition about what a violent crime is. The definition provided by the FBI for its Uniform Crime Report is, quote, those offenses which involve force or threat of force. The chief said that can lead to some difficult calls and reporting.
One of the examples I'll give you, and this was between my intelligence unit and the crime reporting unit for the Massachusetts State Police, we have an incident in our data set for 2017 where the weapon that was listed that categorized the aggravated assault was a smoking pipe.
He says the pipe in question was thrown but yielded no injuries.
It's in our data as an aggravated assault. And in the conversations with the crime reporting unit, they're indicating that it probably shouldn't have been, and in many communities it wouldn't have been. So we're over-reporting in some cases, and that's not because we've been over-reporting for a number of years. So if there's an increase, there's still an increase. But you have to dig into the data before you look at that and get alarmist about it.
Wynn says there is one prevailing commonality in Pittsfield's crime.
Most, if not all, of our crime has some nexus to illicit drugs, whether it's opioids or other illicit drugs. At some point, whether it's to support a habit or in connection with something else, we're going to find somebody who's substance addicted during our investigation.
Specifically, the opioid epidemic has led to an uptick in his office's activity.
It certainly has increased our call volume. Call volume across the board for non-fatal overdoses, fatal overdoses, suspicious activity. But it's also come with some challenges as far as, you know, resources for responding to calls, resources for protecting our personnel, resources for disposing of potentially dangerous substances.
As far as personnel goes, the chief tells WAMC he's been saying for years his department is understaffed. Wynn says he's made progress with the administration of Pittsfield Mayor Linda Tyer about reaching his staffing goal of 110 officers.
But we're in a cycle in our personnel numbers where we're coming up against the retirements for some fairly large classes that came on in the late 80s and early 90s. And so we've brought I think my last count was we brought 22 new police officers on in 24 months, but we're still 12 short.
In October, an 18-year veteran of the force left the department following a July incident where a woman was shot with an unsecured service weapon in the officer's home. Wynn says he stands behind his department's ability to handle its own.
We've been diligent and disciplined about identifying officers who are accused of misconduct, and when those allegations are founded, then we take the most, decisive action we can, given the limits of the law and civil service.
Wynn described Miles Barber's departure from the department as, quote, voluntary to the media last month. He also explained his department's role in handling undocumented immigrants in Pittsfield, saying it only enforces city and state law, not federal law.
There are those occasions where we're enforcing the law of the Commonwealth, and we encounter somebody whose immigration status may be undocumented. That doesn't change our role in it. The organizations that are responsible for whether somebody gets held on a detainer are not the police department in our case. It's the courts and the sheriff's department. So we process arrestees the way we always would, and that gets taken care of after they're out of our custody.
Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landis.
Progressive-leaning groups say now that more Democrats have been elected to the state Senate in Albany, they will hold their feet to the fire in January to ensure that measures like bail reform and legalized marijuana are swiftly enacted into law. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
The groups say they've been pressing for years for measures including ending cash bail, providing more higher education access to prisoners, and ending solitary confinement. They say they are encouraged by the election of 40 Democrats to the state Senate and want lawmakers to include some of the reforms in the state budget. Clarice Torriente, a community activist in Albany, along with other representatives from the other groups, braved a bitterly cold November day to speak just outside the entrance to the state capitol. Torriente says she's been working for the past 5 years coordinating prisoners' access to higher education, but she says only half of state prisons offer anything more than a high school equivalency certificate.
There are 54 prisons in New York State, and only 27 of them have access to higher education for the incarcerated population. Enough is enough. We want our folks to return to communities well prepared to serve and to care for their families and be positive contributors to their local communities.
Peter Cook with the New York State Council of Churches says the state's cash bail system often strands low-income people who are accused of crimes in jail to await proceedings where their lives spiral even further downward. He says that needs to end.
There are many people who find themselves in a county jail and they just can't get out because they can't afford cash bail. And if you're stuck in a county jail, even before you've been convicted of anything, you can lose your house, you can get kicked out of school, you can have your car impounded, and you are put on a trajectory of poverty and put into a cycle where you're more and more vulnerable to being permanently incarcerated.
Cook says the Council of Churches plans to release a budget document in the next couple of weeks before Governor Andrew Cuomo releases his spending plan in January. Cook says it will show how making the changes away from mass incarceration will save the state money that could be used on other things, like infrastructure and education.
Mass incarceration is not only morally wrong, but it's really expensive. And I think that part of this budget process is really asking, what are the investments we need to be making that keep people out of jail and address some of the more systemic questions like poverty and racism, which feed into this whole mass incarceration system.
The state Senate's new majority will include several members from more conservative parts of the state, like the New York City suburbs of Long Island and Westchester. Jamaica Miles with Citizen Action says that should not deter action, though, on the criminal justice reform issues.
I'm anticipating that we're not going to be divided, that this is not just a city issue. This is also a suburban issue. This is a rural issue.
She says legislators need to listen to voters who replaced 6 of 8 former conservative-leaning breakaway Democrats in the September primary and defeated several GOP senators in November's election. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Wall Street, the Dow is up 180 points, 25,261. S&P up 24, 2,725. NASDAQ up 110, 7,246. Support for WAMC comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of plants, trees, and gifts for the holidays. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sundays, 9 to 4. A gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment. Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts. Online at anyhydro.com. The Poughkeepsie Public Library District, partnering with the Art Effect and the Hudson Valley Philharmonic for special big read events, POKLIB.org. Meteorologist Garrett Argyanis with a regional weather summary.
A high-impact winter storm will come through our area tonight into the day tomorrow. Certainly, this is not going to be a blockbuster storm. We're not going to be measuring the snow in feet, but it's still going to be enough snow to cause problems on the roads. Very tough travel conditions are expected tonight right through tomorrow morning. And even though the storm should wind down fairly early tomorrow for most of us, I think the morning commute will be significantly impacted by the storm with a combination of snow and ice across much of our area. So plan for travel delays tomorrow morning, and the odds are quite good that there are going to be school delays and cancellations region-wide. The storm itself is coming out of the south. Snow is sticking to the ground to our south this afternoon, and it's really cold as well. A chilly day for this time of year, so the cold air is locked in place as the moisture comes in, so this is going to start as snow across our entire area. Snow will fall heavily at times into this evening, and the heavy snow will result in rapidly deteriorating road conditions. So that means travel is going to be rough across our area into this evening. The heavy snow band will shift from south to north as the night moves along, and eventually there is going to be some warmer air mixing into the storm. That means some mixing will be possible, especially from the capital region on south and east, with the snow transitioning to a period of sleet, potentially even some freezing rain that could lead to some power outages in areas to the south and east of the capital region. By tomorrow morning, we'll see a mix of snow, mainly north and west of Albany, an icy mix and snow in the capital region, even some rain further to the south and east of Albany, and then the storm will gradually wind down as we go through tomorrow morning, though some snow may linger, especially in the mountains north and west of Albany as we head right into tomorrow afternoon. In terms of snow amounts, again, this is not a blockbuster storm, but an average of about 4 to 8 inches should cover most of us. Of course, this is a large coverage area, so that's not going to account for everybody. There are going to be some heavier amounts north and west of Albany, where some spots may pick up close to a foot of snow, especially in the higher elevations. Further to the south and east, where there is going to be more mixing, accumulations of snow will be a little bit less, but still, I think region-wide this evening, travel is going to be quite rough, and those travel impacts are going to still be a concern right through the first part of the day tomorrow. And now here is my latest regional forecast. First, for the North Country, the Adirondacks, all of Vermont, the Southern Champlain Valley, including Plattsburgh and Burlington, and the Lake George Saratoga region, including Glens Falls. Tonight, largely snow. Some mixing is possible, a low of 18 to 26. Tomorrow, snow and an icy mix slowly ending, a high of 30 to 35. For the northern Catskills, Mohawk Valley, and southern Adirondacks, including Utica, Gloversville, and Oneonta. Tonight, snow with some mixing possible, low 18 to 26. Tomorrow, snow and an icy mix slowly ending, a high of 30 to 35. For the southeastern Catskills, mid and lower Hudson Valley, and interior southern New England, including Middletown, Poughkeepsie, Westchester, Hartford, and Springfield. For tonight, heavy evening snow, changing to an icy mix. Some spots change to rain, a low of 25 to 30. Tomorrow, an icy mix and rain ending during the morning with a high around 40. For the Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and the Berkshires, tonight, heavy evening snow changing to an icy mix, lows of 25 to 30, and for tomorrow, a wintry mix winding down during the morning, remaining cold with highs in the middle to upper 30s. Region-wide on Saturday, a mix of clouds and sun, a few snow showers, breezy with a high around 40. On Sunday, mostly cloudy with a few flurries and highs in the 30s. For WAMC, I'm meteorologist Garrett Argyanis.
Support for WAMC comes from John A. Coleman Catholic High School, a college preparatory independent school focusing on a values-centered education, serving Kingston, Northern Dutchess, and Ulster counties. Ongoing registration throughout the year. ColemanCatholic.net. Dr. Harut Merjian in Stuyvesant Plaza in Albany, New York, a chiropractor serving the community since 1989, 518-489-4984. Quality Foreign Car Care in Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years, QFCC.com. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos is leaving his post. First appointed by Governor Cuomo 3 years ago, Sagos previously served as Deputy Secretary for the Environment for the governor. He is stepping aside at a critical time for environmental issues in New York. Sagos, who says he will remain in the office for the next few months, spoke with WAMC's Lucas Willard at our Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief at Skidmore College about his time as the InCon Commissioner.
I think in the last three, since I've been Commissioner, some of the things that we've been able to accomplish, getting brownfields reauthorized, brownfields tax credits reauthorized, Superfund reauthorized, putting a grant program which didn't exist into water infrastructure, $2.5 billion now is flowing. Didn't exist 8 years ago, and now it does. Environmental Protection Fund, from I mentioned, $134 million, now it's $300 million a year. Every dollar that goes out results in $7 of economic activity, and it's really improving the state. Our parks, 8 years ago, were in verge of being shut. Now we're record visitation in our parks and DEC facilities, and I've prided myself since day one on leading from the front. So really going down, spending time with staff and energizing staff, engaging our staff statewide, and I'll tell you that the morale within the agency is really, really strong right now, and makes me feel really good about the next 4 years.
You're leaving in the next 2-3 months,
sure.
But are we confident that we'll see a maximum contaminant level for PFAS chemicals before you exit the office?
Well, as you know, the Commissioner of Health said that we'd be meeting, reconvening the Drinking Water Quality Council sometime late November, early December. I'm confident that's going to happen. And the intent of the law was clear, convene the council and set the MCL level. So I'm confident that'll happen.
We have now filtration systems installed in the water supplies in Hoosick Falls, which was done a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and in Newburgh more recently.
Right.
Is DEC confident that those filtration systems will filter not only PFOA, but other PFAS chemicals that we may not know as much about?
I'm 100% clear and certain that those systems will work for the PFAS, both the long chain and the short chains. The same systems as carbon treatment systems have been put in place elsewhere in the country. They're proven to work. Whenever we install a system, we need to run it at scale, right? Run it through run the actual water through the actual system that we built to make sure it's working. It worked very well in Hoosick Falls. We intend to test the Lake Washington water down in Newburgh to make sure that that water runs through the system we designed and produces clean, PFOA-free water.
With regards to climate issues,
mm-hmm.
and energy and climate change, how is New York positioned for, after you leave the office, to continue advancing on clean energy goals and reduce the carbon footprint
mm-hmm.
of the state?
Well, it's our top priority, right? When you're faced with the specter of potential irreversible damage done to our climate. You read the IPCC report about 2030 being that year. If we don't make progress by 2030, we're going to see some real problems. I'll tell you what, we're already seeing real problems. And we saw it with Superstorm Sandy. We saw it with the hurricanes that hit New York. We're seeing it with the fires out in California. We've got to get on top of this. Luckily, you have the pullback at the federal level, which is unacceptable and it's terrible. But I think luckily now, here in New York, we've made these investments over the span of 8 years, put in place new policies, targets, right, to reach that are very ambitious. We want to get at least half of our energy from clean energy by 2030, at least half. We want to reduce carbon emissions by 2030 by 40%, and once we hit 2050 by 80%, we're on a pathway to put out 100% clean energy study. So that's something that we have to get to. Look, I think we're very well positioned right now. It's not acceptable when you have the federal government pulling back on such an existential question, and you're leaving it to the states to come up with. But between New York, the other regional greenhouse gas states, 12 states in the Northeast, the Mid-Atlantic, and you have California and many other states, and frankly, many other nations that are doing this, I'm optimistic we'll make some changes and changes for the better. We honestly need the federal government to step up and not mess with this.
So you have a couple of months left. What are you looking forward to taking on before you leave, and then what's next for you?
Well, this is a busy, really busy time of the year, right? The election's now behind us. The governor has been clear about the environment, really, over the last two terms, and I expect him to put that as one of his top priorities moving forward. We're working on the state of the state and the budget right now. I won't give you any previews as to where we're going, other than to say that we intend to push the environment and energy issues as top priorities. Look, we have to do it. It's good for the state's economy to do that. It's long-term sustainability. It's good for our health to do that, and we want to lead. We want to be leading in New York. We don't want to be in the position of playing catch-up. My next steps, I guess we'll see. Right? I intend to step down, leave the agency in a better place, leave the governor with the notion that the environment is in good hands. That we've done enormous good over the last few years. Ultimately, find the right replacement, and then I may be stepping down, but I'm not stepping out of the fight. I intend to remain in this field until I retire, and that hopefully is many, many years from now.
That is New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos speaking earlier this week with our Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard. Support for the Academic Minute comes from Park Building and Millwork, Schenectady, offering millwork, flooring, kitchen and bath designs and more. Providing staff large displays, samples, and design ideas, parkbuildingandmillwork.com. Miss Hall School in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, a boarding and day school offering girls in grades 9 through 12 the real-world experiences of its Horizons Internship and Service Learning Program, misshalls.org.
Money may be the root of all evil, but it can also be used for good. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, President of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Catherine Sims, Associate Professor of Economics and Environmental Studies at Amherst College, looks into paying landowners to help with environmental management.
Paying people to protect the environment is a controversial idea. We know that financial incentives can drive behavior, but will externally provided rewards for conservation crowd out moral or intrinsic motivation? Or erode collective community efforts to protect resources? My co-authors and I studied this question in the context of a major Payments for Ecosystem Services program run by the Mexican National Forestry Commission. The program pays common property landowners to maintain their community forest or other natural areas through management activities, including patrolling for illegal activity, building fire breaks, or enhancing soil conservation. To isolate the program's impacts from other confounding factors, we compared program participants to similar applicants who just missed cutoffs to receive the limited funds. Our results were encouraging for conservation that relies on monetary incentives. We found that the program resulted in an approximately 50% increase in land management activities. In addition, it actually boosted community cohesion or social capital, as measured by factors such as involvement in assemblies, ability to resolve conflicts, trust between members, and community building efforts. We also discovered that the incentives did not discourage participants from contributing to unpaid land management or other voluntary community work. This added new information to our prior findings that Mexico's Payments for Ecosystem Services program reduced forest cover loss, particularly where there was high pressure to convert natural lands to cropland or pasture, and helped alleviate local poverty. Incentive-based conservation makes sense because it compensates landowners for the benefits their ecosystems provide to others. Our research shows it can also support social capital, which is an important driver of economic development. The bottom line? We found that paying citizens to conserve can generate both environmental and community dividends.
That was Catherine Sims of Amherst College. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from AACNU, advancing liberal learning and research for the public good. Support for WAMC comes from the New York State AFL-CIO. 2.5 million members speaking with one voice, helping working families achieve a better life. NYSAFLCIO.org. Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, where a 14,000-acre lakeside wilderness is the campus, offering a hands-on approach to career-oriented education. PaulSmiths.edu. The Poughkeepsie Public Library District, partnering with The Artifact and the Hudson Valley Philharmonic for special Big Read events, POKLIB.org. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.